Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
What's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Dominic Pachaco.
Right on cue.
Dominic Pachaco. I'm Justin Spears. Episode 69. We're going to make sure it is an especially nice episode for you guys. Dom, Kevin Sutland was introduced as the Arizona head football coach earlier this week. And EG's went on Twitter and said, Kevin Sumlin, don't deny the reason why you came to Tucson was because of our EG's. You can't deny it.
Absolutely.
My question to you is, though, you're an EG guy.
Who isn't? Spent this much time in Tucson. If you're in Tucson listening to this podcast right now and you haven't had EG's, run there now. You might see Kevin Sumlin.
You might see him there. Flavor of the month this month is prickly pear.
Is it?
Pretty good.
Is it still prickly pear?
It's pretty good.
January still. God. It's been a long month.
It's been a long month.
We have favorite flavors, though. Is that what you were getting at?
Yeah. What's your favorite flavor?
I'm going to take a page out of our editor Ryan Finley's book and go Holly Berry.
Yes.
Right?
I like it.
Right?
Because according to Mr. Finley, Holly Berry tastes like soap. EG's, I'm here to tell you that Holly Berry does not taste like soap.
No, I forgot.
It's one of the best flavors ever.
I'm glad you said that. I thought Ryan was a Holly Berry advocate. I forgot that he thinks it tastes like soap.
Yeah, it tastes like soap, according to him.
Okay. I gave Ryan way too much credit. Ryan, if you're listening, shame on you, man.
Shame on you.
Go buy Kevin Sumlin a Holly Berry EG's.
Well, you gotta wait till next December for that. I always like watermelon, because it's the month of July. Watermelon's always pretty good. You can't go wrong with Lucky Lime or Pina Colada.
Watermelon's always clutch.
Yeah.
Especially during the summer.
Oh, yeah. It's, for those who are over the age of 21 and can provide themselves adult beverages, I highly recommend, if you're going the more harder routes on the beverage, watermelon EG, mix that in with a little stuff. That's a fun afternoon.
Gotta get the goods in there.
That's a fun afternoon at a park. Anyways, Arizona basketball, before we really get into some EGs, Arizona basketball, they beat the California Golden Bears 79-58 on Wednesday night. A very sluggish start. Arizona, they committed 6 turnovers in the first 5 minutes. Parker Jackson Cartwright had 3 of them in just the first 2 minutes. However, he got it going. He finished the night with 14 points. Very efficient from the three-point range.
4-6.
4-6. I mean, that's not bad at all. Dylan Smith started in place for Raleigh Alkins because of soreness in his foot. The same one that he broke earlier this year. Dylan Smith, I thought, played tremendous, especially for the role that he had. DeAndre Ayton did DeAndre Ayton things. He became a historic figure in Arizona basketball history, the only freshman to record 13 double-doubles.
It was a pretty impactful night for a pretty boring game. Arizona started slow,
boring,
then pulled away. So, I mean, you said it. First few minutes, Cal jumped out to a 6-point lead in the first minute or so.
And we're like, here we go.
What in the world is going on? And it was just one of those nights. But, yeah, I mean, Parker, the only number you really have to look at him for is assists and turnovers. He finished with 6 and 3. So, I mean, that's as much as you can ask from him. Efficient from three-point range. Wildcats as a whole shot lights out. I don't have the stats up in front of me right now from the whole season, but that had to be one of their best shooting nights. 62% from the field,
yeah,
including 58% from three-point range. They've been doing it all year. I know everyone always harps on them as a poor three-point shooting team. They're one of the best in the Pac-12, and they've proven it game after game. DeAndre Ayton, again, I mean, 9 of 11 field goals is what sticks out to me. This guy just can't be stopped. Not only is he shooting at a high clip, rebounding at a highly efficient rate, the guy just doesn't miss. I mean, yeah, you get him the ball down inside, he's money every time. I mean, he goes 9 of 11, puts up 20 points in 31 minutes, you're going to win every game.
And also, the one thing that really also pleases me when I watch DeAndre play is...
It pleases you, huh?
He does. I get pure satisfaction from watching this guy play.
Good basketball.
Because usually big men like that who are decent at shooting, that have his size, they like to think that they're more guard-like than they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
We all know those guys when we play pickup basketball. They're the only guy that's on the court that's 6'6". But
playing with a bunch of 5'8", 5'10" guys.
But yeah, he's the one who's shooting the most three-pointers. We're like, bro, get in the paint, man. Yeah. Just start posting up. Start making some post moves, doing something.
DeAndre Ayton does.
When he gets the ball at the top of the key, though, it's not like, oh, I'm going to take a couple jab steps and then pop one right in your face. That was something more Lowry Markkanen did.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he gets...
Effectively.
Very effectively. As soon as he gets the ball, he's looking to attack.
Mm-hmm.
He gets you with the pump fake. He's doing all kinds of the Hakeem the Dream moves, and he gets to the bucket with so much ease. He is something... I just can't even describe it. I feel like we talk about this every podcast.
We do. You know, you just got me thinking. We're over halfway through the year now. We're going to start approaching the home stretch with DeAndre Ayton here. It's time to start enjoying what Arizona has with this special basketball player in Mikhail for the rest of the year, because he's not winning player of the year. He's going to be an All-American. He'll make first team and all that. But we've talked about it all year, player of the year candidate. He's not winning it. That's going to be Trae Young, in all likelihood, at Oklahoma, just putting up absurd numbers. So, look, Ayton's going to go. He already broke the freshman Pac-12 record for Arizona. He's going to break the overall record, which I think is 19.
Yeah.
It's something like that. 19, low 20s. I don't know the number off the top of my head. It's Al Fleming. Did it in 75, I want to say.
Yeah, something like that. Or 74.
So yeah, 74, 75, I think it was. Anyway, look, he's going to set records. He's not going to get the national accolades that he deserves. Enjoy DeAndre Ayton, because he's a one-of-a-kind player. You might not see him for another generation. You might not see another player like him for another generation. So enjoy watching him, because the guy's an animal. He's going to be a top three, if not the number one overall pick in the NBA draft. The guy's that good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we talk about it every show. I know you guys love it. You're DeAndre Ayton. What's better than this?
Yeah. What's better than this?
Look,
guys being dudes.
What's turning into the biggest concern for Arizona, we've harped on defense all year. Another thing we've harped on, bench play. Another lousy performance. I don't even think lousy does it justice. 6 points against a Cal squad. And I know that involved Dylan Smith getting in and being extremely efficient on the night, starting in place of Raleigh Alkins. So bench stats a little bit skewed this game with that in mind, but... Still, 6 points. What stands out to me is Ira Lee came in off the bench, played 9 minutes, fouled out in those 9 minutes, had 4 boards, no points, no shots. That's what's concerning to me. I mean, if you're most... Not cream of the crop.
Yeah, he's
not
the cream of the crop.
Look, I mean, if he comes in and your most productive player is fouling out in 9 minutes and not putting up a basket, I mean, look what Arizona's bench did. They went 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They went 2 of 8 from the field. It's unacceptable. And if I'm Sean Miller, that's my biggest concern. You have to start mixing some of these guys in, whether it's playing them more, getting them more minutes. Come March, even in the Pac-12 tournament, this isn't going to cut it.
Yeah. We all need a bench. For any successful team that has ever made a run in March, they've all been deep. I mean, you look at North Carolina last year, Roy Williams utilized 9 to 10 guys.
Effectively.
And we all predicted Arizona to have that similar rotation, and maybe Arizona's bench isn't what we thought it is. You know, I wish we had the great Dennis Green quote. They like, they are who we thought they were.
I thought we had that at one time recorded here, but
we gotta have, we gotta get that. But Arizona's bench is not who we thought they were.
They're not the cream of the crop.
They're definitely not the cream of the crop. Emmanuel Acott, he was pretty. I don't know. I wouldn't say he was
put in 15 minutes. I mean, that's more than we've seen from him a lot of the year. So I think that's why.
I just don't know. I just don't know where he is. Right. I mean, Miller keeps talking about his knee tendonitis and he's still recovering from it, but then he's getting minutes here and there. I don't know where to gauge him right now.
To me, it's a lost season for Emmanuel Acott. And I know it's hard to say because he can come on at the end of the year if he gets healthy and he starts playing a lot. But like you said, I mean, this is a guy who Sean Miller hyped up as one of the best defenders on the team early in the year. And I think we all expected that from him. We all expected him to come out and be so in that rotation with guys like Dylan Smith, Brandon Randolph, Ira Lee. I mean, this bench was supposed to be stacked, and I think Acott was kind of that ringleader coming off the bench. You know, he was that sixth guy. He was going to kind of be that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson versatile. Might not put up 10 points a game for you, but he's going to be doing it in multiple facets all over the court. Yeah. So he's going to have to be productive and have those efficient minutes for you. Not only are we not seeing that from Emmanuel Acott, we're not seeing that from anyone.
Yeah. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, though, he stayed all 4 years in high school.
Right.
Emmanuel Acott is a reclassified guy. I understand he's had the training with Chris Rounds and the amazing Arizona basketball strength and conditioning staff. However, when you go from being the guy for your entire life, and you know that you could have another year of high school to develop, and then you go into a situation like it is at Arizona, where he's the little brother of the team. I mean, he's the guy that has a lot of potential. However, I just don't think that Emmanuel was ready to make the jump from high school to college by reclassifying. And maybe, I don't know, maybe this is just me. And again, I don't know the full scenario. Maybe Emmanuel Acott is this fantastic player. He just hasn't been unleashed yet, and that's probably because of his knee tendonitis. And again, knee tendonitis is no joke. I mean, the way people described it throughout the course of the year with him is like, oh, he's got some soreness in his knee. It's no big deal. No, knee tendonitis is a pretty big deal.
Well, that's what, I mean, you said it. That's what's throwing us off is it's a big deal, but he just came out and played 15 minutes in a game Arizona won by over 20 points. So where is the state of that knee? We don't know. Miller's been talking about it all year. It's obviously bothering Acott because he's not getting putting out a full body of work in any game this year. So we don't really know where it is. Again, maybe he comes on late in the year. Nothing to be thrilled about, but it was good to see him out there for 15 minutes. It was good to see him on the court. Nothing really shown from the stat line. Hit a three, was 1 for 2 of the field. Assist, rebound here and there, but 3 turnovers. I mean, that's where he is. He's going to get minutes, but he's not going to be sharp because he hasn't gone through the repetitions that everyone else on the team has or everyone else coming off the bench has. And that's just where he is. If he gets 15 minutes, don't expect a whole lot out of him. Just be happy he's on the floor.
I got a bad feeling about Saturday, Dom, against Stanford. Again, the Cardinal, they're tied with Arizona atop of the Pac-12. Whoever wins Saturday's game will have sole possession of first place in the Pac-12. If Raleigh Alkins is not playing, I really have a bad feeling about this because I don't know who can really guard Dorian Pickens. And I was... It's so crazy to think that I watched Dorian Pickens play in high school. I didn't think he was all that good. I just thought he was an average player. He still scored 26 points in the game that I was at, a quiet 26.
A quiet 26.
But Alonzo Trier can't guard him, or he can guard him, but I don't think he's going to be able to stop him or contain him in any sort of way. He's going to get his buckets. I really think a game like Saturday – Raleigh Alkins needs to be back for Arizona.
Absolutely. And you know, we Sean Miller missed it a lot in the beginning of the season, and that was a topic of discussion after every single game. You know, when's Raleigh coming back? What's he going to bring to the team? It's a lot. He brings a tremendous amount of experience. I mean, he's kind of that, I don't want to say leader on the court because we're still looking for one, but, I mean, he's kind of that figure on the court, and he's another body to put defensive that the defense has to worry about. What I'm worried about with Stanford is how well they shot against ASU. ASU, not a great defensive team, but Stanford, I mean, made easy work of them, shot 42% from the beyond the arc, 51% from the field, turned the ball over a lot, and still was able to win against the number 16 team in the country. Talking about bench points, Stanford had 28 against ASU, so something to keep an eye on there a lot.
28 bench points.
Never thought we'd be saying halfway through the year that Stanford is deeper than Arizona, but here we are saying it every single week. Stanford is deeper than Arizona. Again, in basketball, Stanford is deeper than Arizona. And while I'm on defense here, we were talking about this before we came on this podcast. Arizona is, you know, for as bad of a rap as they've gotten, deservedly so, they're third in the Pac-12 in scoring defense. Third in the Pac-12. If you're looking for how bad this conference is this year, there's your answer. This Arizona team, which is probably the worst defensively I've seen since I've been following them, they're third in the Pac-12, and looking at KenPom, they rank number 70 in the country in defensive efficiency. So third in the Pac-12, 70th in the country. That's how bad this conference is. So when you see Arizona struggle in the beginning of the games, if you see them go and lose to an 11-8 Stanford, granted they're hot, won five straight, 5-1 in the Pac-12, which we'll have Bruce on to talk a little bit more about. If you see them struggle, it's a problem because the opposition isn't great. I don't care if it's Stanford, I don't care if it's UCLA, USC, Colorado, whoever it may be, even ASU. Arizona's got to be winning these games, and if they struggle against Stanford, they'll lose first place of Pac-12. Still expect to see them at the end of the year, but Arizona's got to start putting out, you know, as we roll into the second half of the Pac-12 play.
You know what time it is, Dom?
Bruce.
It's time.
Hello, Bruce.
To get Bruce Pascoe on the line.
Let's get it.
Hello, my name is Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
All right, Bruce Pascoe here on the other line. He's up in the Bay Area, spending a night in Palo Alto. He was in Berkeley for Wednesday night as Arizona had a 21-point victory over the Cal Golden Bears. And Bruce, I don't think we should really talk too much about Wednesday night game. Pretty much the gist of it was Arizona got off to an awful start. 6 turnovers in just the first 5 minutes. I tweeted out Arizona was on pace to commit 48 turnovers in that game, and they were, which is ridiculous. But Bruce, another double-double from DeAndre Ayton. He is the all-time leader of double-doubles in a season by a freshman. Pretty much in another impressive game from Ayton. What did you kind of take away from the game up in Berkeley?
Pretty much that. I mean, it was that first 5 minutes, and, you know, I mean, you could say a little bit of that had to do with the pressure that Cal was doing, and they're just kind of wacky looking defensively, but, you know, this is a little bit of a troubling trend for Arizona that they've had a number of games, not to that extreme, but they've had a number of games recently where there's been 2 or 3 turnovers in that first 4 minute block, and it just looks like they're, you know, a little tense, maybe, you know, maybe too afraid of making mistakes. They're just not flowing right. And, you know, against Cal, it wasn't a big issue. They certainly came back with ease in that one. But that's something, you know, if they do Saturday at Stanford or in a few other games this season, it really could be costly.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the game, it was what they are, and that was more characteristic then. And then Ayton doing what he does. And, you know, I thought the most interesting thing about it to me was the technical he got when he dunked and he kind of flexed, and Miller said he growled a little bit at Don Coleman at Cal, and Coleman apparently talked back, and they both got double technicals. And then when I asked Miller about it after, he said, you know, the interesting thing is he's so physical and imposing that Miller claims that the officials are having trouble because some of the fouls are really hard, and they don't even look like hard fouls because of the way Ayton is. And yeah. So he's basically saying Ayton's at a disadvantage. And then Ayton comes down and he dunks and celebrates a little, and boom, technical. So I think there was sort of a subtle complaint on Miller's part about that. But, you know, it is a different deal. He did even say the officials are, you know, getting used to Ayton. And, you know, it's not, basically he said it's not really their fault. I mean, who's ever seen a guy like this before? I mean, that was the thing that struck me. And the rest of the game was pretty forgettable.
Bruce, you know, we said we wouldn't spend too much time on Cal, so let's move right on ahead to Stanford here.
Yeah.
against, you know, they just coming off a win over Arizona State. Sun Devils continue to struggle, and Stanford stays hot now. 5 straight wins, 5-1 in the Pac-12. Who Pickens put up 19 points on? Was that game last night?
Yeah, seven from three or something.
So Pickens had a good game, all around good game offensively for Stanford. What kind of matchups do you see them giving Arizona, and who can match up with DeAndre Ayton inside?
That's the big question I'm wondering too. I think the one guy they'll try on him off the bench is Josh Sharma, who's a kind of a slender 7-footer, but he's apparently playing with some confidence lately, and you know I think they'll certainly try him a lot. And then they have Michael Humphrey 6'8", and Reed Travis. Michael Humphrey's about 6'9", Reed Travis is like 6'8", but he plays bigger and he's really tough and aggressive. So those two guys, even though they give up some inches on Ayton, I think they might they might converge on him a lot, and then we might see they've got some other really more athletic big guys. They got this KZ Opala freshman and Oscar De Silva, who's more of a three, but he can play inside, and it wouldn't surprise me if they just kind of throw some of those more athletic guys at him as well and just try and screw him up, because they, you know, as everybody knows, you can't really guard him one-on-one. And but they have more size and more experience and toughness to do it than Cal, I think, for sure. And so that to me is really the interesting thing. Maybe they can slow him down a little bit.
And I mentioned Darian Pickens. Him and Michael Humphrey, both from the Phoenix area, played high school ball in Phoenix, played on the same club team in Arizona, and were both actually recruited and offered by Sean Miller at Arizona. Both turned him down and went to Stanford. Bruce, Darian Pickens has been a big scorer for him this year. Stanford, not the best team on defense, but they've really come on hot shooting lately. Is that going to be a problem for Arizona on Saturday?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think it's going to be. There's been a number of times with Stanford I thought they'd have trouble, and you know, but they've won 15 in a row. So there's something going on here. And the last 3 or 4 years, they haven't even been close. I mean, they've had a couple games, including one last year, that were about 6-7 point games. But for the most part, they've just had Stanford's number, and you wonder if this is maybe. This maybe is the best chance that Stanford has, and you know, to end this, really, with the experience and size they have. Everybody's healthy now except for one of their guards. Marcus Sheffield's got a foot thing that's probably going to have him out for the year, I think. But they're in pretty good shape. Yeah, and they shoot pretty well, and they're experienced, tough. I think Saturday they might actually have a decent crowd. I mean, they haven't really. Crowds have kind of tailed off at Stanford in the last few years, and I think the last couple Arizona games have been played on like Thursdays and at 6 o'clock when nobody can even get there because of the traffic. And you go in there, and it's literally, especially at the beginning, it's like half Arizona fans and half Stanford fans, because there's always so many Bay Area U of A alums that go to these games, and they'll take the afternoon off and make sure they're there. Stanford fans don't care as much, and so maybe that changes on a Saturday when Stanford's playing well, and maybe it gets pretty close to full, and they have some support there, so that could be interesting too.
And I was looking at Stanford, I mean, not just against Arizona State, but I've kind of kept tabs on them throughout the course of Pac-12 play, and they really did surprise me. I had no idea that Stanford had this much talent on their team. I'm not saying they have superb talent. I mean, realistically, the only guy that could probably play in the NBA in the future is Reed Travis. And I mean, that's going to be unlikely.
Bruce, maybe Dejon Davis, he's got potential, but he's got a ways.
And Dejon Davis was a Lorenzo Romar recruit.
Yeah.
And then he decommitted when Romar was fired and then went to Arizona.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah. So, but they seem to – Jared Haas is the Stanford head coach. He seems to know how to work with less talent, but he knows how to make them all work together. I mean, what's something about the Cardinal that stands out to you?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think he's – you know, even though it's his second year, he's still got – a lot of Johnny Dawkins players on that roster, so it's sort of been a mesh of those guys and that system with what he's trying to do. And he's brought in, a few freshmen that are quite a bit more athletic, actually, especially Davis, but even the two big guys, bigger guys, and I think that's given them a different look, and, you know, a look they really need, because they were what they were. They were real, you know, they did what they did, but it was not, they're not athletic. They had trouble matching up, and their guards weren't super strong or quick. And now I think with Davis playing better, they can give you those different looks, and they're a lot more versatile, and they can match up. And I think they'll, you know, they can do a decent job of matching up with Arizona probably as well as just about anybody in the league, I would think.
Bruce, I know Jess and I certainly didn't think that Stanford and Arizona would be tied atop of the Pac-12 six games in. I mean, Stanford, like Justin just said, really surprising how much talent they've been playing with. You know, right now, tied, whoever wins Saturday's game is going to be atop the Pac-12.
Which is crazy.
Is this Cardinal team for real? Can they actually make a run at Arizona at the end of Pac-12 play and possibly, sneak in?
I mean, they might sneak into the NCAA tournament. They could. Their strength of schedule is really good. They just didn't win any games in all conference. You know that. And but because of that, you know, if they put together, a 12-6, 11-7 Pac-12 season, I can see them maybe squeaking in there. But I don't see how. I mean, they might win Saturday. It wouldn't surprise me. But I don't see them as winning the Pac-12, because I think the schedule's going to turn against them a little bit. They've had, frankly, they probably should be 6-0. I mean, they had Cal down by 17 at Naples with their whole lineup back, although they were just getting used to each other at that point. They had Pickens just back and a couple other guys that had just come back. But if they had won that game, and then they had the LA schools at home. Then they went to Washington, two of the weaker schools in the league, and swept that, which is, granted, a great accomplishment for them, but, there's a lot of tougher road trips that they probably have coming up. So I think, I think it's going to be tougher for them.
If they are going to make the NCAA tournament, Saturday would be a good place to start. Looking at their schedule, you said it, Bruce. I mean, their strength of schedule is, pretty impressive. They've played, they played Kansas on a neutral site, played Florida on a neutral site. UNC earlier in the year at home, and they've lost all of them. So
no, they didn't just lose. They got
breaks beat most off them. A win over Arizona State's big, but yeah, I mean, a win on Saturday would be a huge step toward a possible bid in the NCAA tournament. I think they're 11-8, right? So not anything special, but what they've done in the Pac-12 certainly has the conference's attention. Bruce, you wrote about this in your Seen and Heard from the Cal game the other night. Are we going to have another color out on Saturday?
That's what I heard. I heard they were going to have color here. Red out thing. But honestly, I completely spaced on that and didn't ask them today when I was over there. And I don't know for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me. And it is always funny that, you know, that a lot of schools try it. And certainly Arizona has their own, but it's almost automatic now. It seems like wherever they go, it's like purple out, red out, gold out, whatever. And at Cal last night, I mean, as much as they tried it, it really didn't look good because they had too many empty seats. Most of those empty seats were painted blue, so that looked blue and gold, which is their colors, of course, but it wasn't solid gold. And then of course, you had about 1,000 fans who were wearing U of A red and some white, so it just looked weird. It didn't, you know, and they gave out probably 8,000 gold t-shirts and, you know, didn't get anything out of it, in my opinion.
All right, Bruce, before we let you go, you've covered this Arizona basketball team for many years. We just have to ask you, what's probably the most iconic moment that you remember covering this team in the Bay Area?
Oh, that would have been that shot that Nick Robinson, I think it was. He hit a half court shot to beat Arizona at the buzzer. There was that, and that was probably.
That was 2002, right?
2001, 2002, one of those years. Yeah. Tiger Woods was sitting at courtside.
Yeah.
I remember him jumping out and joining the celebration. And but on the other hand, I believe that's where Richard Jefferson broke his foot too, if I remember right. And that was kind of a down moment for U of A. Both of them were really. So those are two that jump out at me. The one thing I remember too is that it seemed like until Sean Miller took over, Stanford always had a lot of success at McHale. Arizona had a lot of success at Maples. It was really lopsided deal like that. But that hasn't been the case for many years, and it's been all Arizona under Sean Miller, of course. And so there really haven't been anything too memorable lately. It's just been a lot of success for U of A, for sure.
Okay. All right, well, that's Arizona Daily Star basketball beat writer Bruce Pasco. You can follow him on Twitter at Bruce Pasco. Bruce, we can't thank you enough for always hopping on with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, take care. Enjoy the bay. All right, special thanks to Bruce Pasco for always joining our podcast, breaking down the Arizona Wildcats as they are in the Bay Area. I would say a game that has Pac-12 leadership on the line.
Absolutely.
I would say it's a pretty big game, right?
First place in the Pac-12 at stake.
Heck yeah. All right, well, for Dom, I am Justin. You can actually catch the Wildcats this Saturday.
2 p.m.
Another afternoon game. Three afternoon games in a row. On Saturdays.
Keep giving them to me, Pac-12.
We love it.
You can throw them on any channel you want as long as they're at 2 p.m.
This channel this time around is on CBS.
Oh, really? CBS. Okay. CBS, so, 2 p.m. Saturday.
CBS, 2 p.m. Saturday. Arizona taking on Stanford at Maples Pavilion. For Dom, I am Justin. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and download that free Wildcaster app. We'll see you next time.